How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA. We're all made of DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate the public on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. Joining me today is Dan Donovan, co-founder and CEO of One Voice. One Voice is a rare disease community building software solution. Dan has spent nearly 3 decades in the pharmaceutical industry on both the industry and service side of business, first with Pfizer, then creating Envision Pharma, which was acquired by United Biosource Corporation. His introduction to the world of rare disease began in 2012 when he was appointed to the board of directors and later as chief business officer of Cancer Prevention Pharmaceuticals. Dan is the primary vision behind Clear Offering. Thanks so much for coming on, Dan.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Kara.
Yeah, I love discussing rare diseases and kind of new developments in rare diseases. They've kind of been in the spotlight recently, so we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. But how did you get involved in the world of rare disease?
You know, I got involved in the world of rare diseases, both for personal and professional reasons. I'm actually the carrier of a rare disease, so it's something I have to be a bit vigilant about, as I may have passed that on to my kids. And my mother died of a rare cancer, so I was thrown into that world as well as a caregiver for my mom. So those were sort of some personal experiences. Also some friends with siblings that have had rare diseases that have come to me looking for advice. So I kind of got into that rare disease field both personally but also professionally, as you mentioned, when I joined Cancer Prevention Pharmaceuticals. It's a small rare disease company with products in phase 2 and phase 3 development based out of Tucson, Arizona. So I got in both for personal and for professional reasons.
And those personal reasons you mentioned, you said your mother had a rare cancer. Is that related to the rare disease that you carry?
It's not.
It's not. So two different rare happening.
Yep. Two different rare happened. And we only found out that I had this rare disease when my wife was pregnant with our first child. And they did some genetic testing. They said, oh, why don't we test you as well while you're here? And they tested me. And lo and behold, I was a carrier of a rare disease. I had no idea.
So when you say carrier, that means that you don't actually have the rare disease, that you can pass it on to offspring.
That's right.
Now, some people hear rare disease and they think, rare, like that happens to almost no one. You know, there's not a lot out there. But kind of can we myth bust that? How common are rare diseases as a whole when we put them all together?
Yeah, I mean, people would be surprised. It's more common than most people know. So the facts are there are about 7,000 rare diseases. To be defined as a rare disease, there have to be 200,000 or fewer people with that disease in the U.S. So it is pretty uncommon from that perspective, but the fact that there are 7,000 is pretty astounding. The real challenge in rare diseases, though, is that there are only about 400 treatments. And some of those treatments are multiple treatments for the same rare disease. So the vast majority of these rare diseases don't have treatment options. It's a scary thing.
Yeah, and just not having people are advocating for people with rare diseases, but maybe not as much as something that's a very common disease that people have heard of and they can kind of identify, oh, I know someone with this, and kind of can back it up that way in their mind.
Yeah, you know, we've heard of arthritis and hypertension and atherosclerosis and diabetes. Those are the sorts of the more common diseases that get a lot of the attention. Some diseases that rare diseases that people might know or be familiar with are things like sickle cell disease or Lou Gehrig's disease. You remember the ice bucket challenge last summer, ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease. That's a rare disease. So there are some that people are familiar with, but there are a lot more that people really have no idea about and you don't really find out about until your family's been impacted by it.
So your project has been One Voice. Tell us a little bit about it. What is One Voice?
Well, One Voice is a patient-centric, rare disease, community-building, cloud-based software solution. That was a mouthful.
But, yes.
But what we do is we address three unmet needs for the rare community. And the census is really patient and caregiver focused. The three unmet needs that bubbled to the surface as we did our research was, one, a need for emotional support, because these families and these patients often feel isolated. The second one was this passionate desire for knowledge. And it's any kind of knowledge, whether it's a blog, a scientific paper, a clinical trial, an academic center that's researching a drug or the disease. Any kind of information these people can get their hands on, they're so grateful for. And the third part, because as I mentioned, there are so few treatments for rare diseases, many of these people end up in the world of clinical trials. And that is a complex and confusing world for anybody, much less someone who's been thrown into this world of rare disease because, say, a child's just been diagnosed with a rare disease. So those are the three major unmet needs that we address with our software solution.
So if someone is on the site, kind of how does it work? What they you offer these three types of different kind of need meeting tasks, but how does it work once they're on the site? How can they connect with others? How can they find this information? How do you break it down for them?
Yeah, so we break it down in features. They come in and it's a positively charged environment. So we look for and we weed out anybody who speaks negatively or posts inappropriate things. We have community managers. We have software that monitors the discussions. We want to make this a real positively charged place because people are in a rough spot. So they come in and there are three major features. There's rare courage. Rare courage is a social wall, and people can meet people like them with their rare disease and talk about what's going on in their lives, whether it's a surgery they're undergoing or maybe they're having a discussion with their child whom they've passed this rare disease on to, and they just want to understand how others in that space have talked to their family. So we create this social wall, and everybody can have a look at the social wall. You can view the discussions, but not necessarily participate in them. And we've added a couple of cool things to that. So for instance, you know, it's kind of hard to like somebody's chemotherapy or upcoming surgery. And we found that the most common sentiments expressed in rare communities were hugs, thanks, and prayers. So in order to stay in this positively charged environment, we offer people an opportunity to give others hugs, thanks, and prayers. And the other thing we do, which is really cool in this social wall, is that rather than serving up advertising, we serve up knowledge. So the software uses natural language search to understand the discussions that are going on in the social wall and offers up scientific papers or clinical trials or videos or blogs, anything that might be relevant to that particular discussion pops up in the walls because these people are so passionate about learning, we serve up knowledge.
And some of that knowledge can be kind of dense for people that may not come from a scientific background. Even if you are a very highly educated person in general, that maybe you don't really specialize in science, is there a way that you help kind of translate this information if it's maybe a scientific paper and not just a blog post?
Yeah, so we recognize, so that was the Rare Courage section. Then we have Rare Curate. And Rare Curate is where all this knowledge resides, and it resides in five different buckets of information. And the reason why we did these five different buckets is because we recognize that people learn differently. Some people are more visually motivated, and they like infographics and videos. Some people are more scientifically oriented. They want to read guidelines and scientific papers from medical journals. Some people want to get a daily news feed of what's happening in their particular rare disease. So we've addressed that by offering up information in each one of those categories. And what the software can also do is get smarter. So the software will see that me, as a community member, I only like to look at videos and what's happening on the internet. So rather than serving up scientific papers, when it sees me there, it serves up videos and whatever's happening on the web. So that's how we address that sort of community member desire to learn the way they like to learn.
So very tailored to kind of what the person is interested in and kind of their education level when it comes to rare diseases or the specific rare disease they have.
Yes, very much so. Specific rare disease is really important. So we build these platforms one rare disease at a time, and we go really deep in each rare disease. So let me give you an example. The first platform that we launched is FAP voice. So that's familial adenomatous polyposis. What often happens with these FAP patients is they get lumped in with colon cancer, right? And colon cancer is a massive community with a million, you know, millions of people. But for FAP patients, that's way down the line, and they've got a long life to live before they really need to think about colon cancer. They also get lumped in with Lynch syndrome or a couple of other diseases that are similar, Peutz-Jeghers, that are similar to FAP. They want their own place with their own information. So that's what we did. So we created this FAP-specific platform called FAP Voice.
And people with FAP, for those that don't know, have an increased risk of colon cancer, as you kind of suggested, but it's very high. How high is it?
Well, if it's left untreated, there's a 100% chance of getting colon cancer.
That's what I thought. I didn't want to say 100 because that's a very definite number in science, but yeah, 100%, which is it's going to happen unless you do what?
Unless you have surgery, and it's going to happen by the time you're 39. Unless you have surgery. So what happens is the colon gets carpeted with polyps. We're talking hundreds to thousands of polyps. So the only treatment right now is surgery. So the colon's removed, typically at the same time or sometime later, the rectum is removed, and then there's a lifetime of surveillance and additional surgeries as the disease continues to progress. So it is a very challenging disease with only surgery as an option. The thing that attracted me to cancer prevention pharmaceuticals is we've got a drug in late stage development, as I mentioned, in phase 3, that will hopefully allow users to delay the time to surgery. So if we can get a kid through college or get people married before they have to have these surgeries so they're in a more stable part in their lives, that would be a wonderful thing.
And it can be really hard for these patients to, for someone that gets and develops colon cancer that doesn't have a inherited disease that has led to that development, but rather that someone has FAP where it's something that's genetic that they know it's going to happen if they've been tested. Very different mindsets there, that you are expecting it to come and that you're preparing for that versus you're dealing with news of being diagnosed with colon cancer.
Yeah, typically an FAP patient has a family member, a parent that's got FAP, and the parents monitor very closely the children, and they know that some of these kids are probably going to have FAP and go through the same sort of experience that they've gone through. However, 20% of the cases with FAP are de novo, so there isn't a family history. So they go through misdiagnosis after misdiagnosis before they eventually realize that it's FAP, and you know, and different treatments and things. That's very typical in rare diseases. People with rare diseases are typically misdiagnosed 7 times before they get to the appropriate diagnosis and treatment.
So what does FAP Voice offer patients? We've talked about One Voice as a whole, but how is this first site that you've just launched very exciting? What does this specifically offer patients?
It offers them a place to find a community. It offers them a one-stop shop. It offers them a home. So they can go into this positively charged environment and talk about what's going on with their lives and maybe get support for upcoming surgery. They also like to share positive things like, just had a scope and my disease hasn't progressed. And everybody says, that's fantastic. And they offer hugs and, you know, it's great stuff. But they find that community. They also find all the information they want on their rare disease. So what the software does is it goes out and it gathers everything you can possibly imagine on, in this case, FAP. Whether it's a blog, a geneticist, or a nutritionist with experience in FAP, it could be a Facebook group, it could be just about anything. And then what we do is we drop that into a holding pen. And we have a team of advanced degree curators who go through that information and only post up the good stuff for the community. So we do all of that difficult homework for that particular community and their rare disease. So they just get the good stuff. So they find that knowledge. And then the next thing we do in Rare Clinical is we connect people with trials and trials to people. So if there's a new trial, clinical trial, an FAP sponsored by an academic center or a pharmaceutical company or both, we reach out to that community and let them know that there's a trial and maybe they should look into it. And we have a clinical trial wizard where you can answer a few questions using geolocation and inclusion-exclusion criteria of trials and find out if you're a match for a trial, and we can match those people up with the appropriate trials. Really neat stuff. So we think we can accelerate clinical research in these rare diseases.
And so you have this FAP voice right now. What are the others coming down the pipeline for other rare diseases?
Well, we are now in discussions with dozens of advocacy groups, pharma companies, and CROs about launching one-voice communities in a host of rare diseases, from Huntington's disease to neuroblastoma to sickle cell disease, all kinds of rare diseases that we're in discussions with. So it's exciting, you know, and I hope we have dozens of these platforms running up next year. And as my colleague Nadia likes to say, she wants to have 7,000 of these platforms launched over the course of the next
one for every rare disease that we are aware of.
Yes, that would be awesome.
Now, with this fantastic community and just kind of building this, how are you sharing it with others in the rare disease community? Because it's a large community as a whole. So how are you spreading the word?
Well, it's large and it's really diverse, right? Because there's so many rare diseases. So we probably attended about 15 conferences last year to share One Voice. So we went to the World Orphan Drug Conference. We went to the Global Genes Conference out in California, which is a big advocacy group meeting. We went to the NORD Conference down in Virginia just about a month or so ago. And I have to tell you that the response has been absolutely phenomenal. Whether it's a patient or a caregiver or an advocate or a pharma company or a payer or academic center geneticist, everybody is reacting incredibly positive to the potential of building a one-voice platform in their specific rare disease. So it's a very exciting time, very stressful as well, but very exciting.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of kind of pressure, but something that you want to get out there as soon as you can because it's affecting so many lives.
We walk away from these conferences so pumped up that we know we're onto something here. We know there's a huge unmet need that we're addressing. And so it's just a matter of time, I think, before we can launch dozens of these.
And you mentioned NORD before, and I forgot to mention that you're a Connecticut company, and this is a Connecticut radio show. Yeah. You're located in Westport, but NORD headquarters are the National Organization of Rare Diseases is in Danbury, Connecticut. So obviously you're very active in the online community. You've mentioned other conferences. Do you host or participate in any local Connecticut events?
We don't. Do we participate in any local Connecticut events? We generally participate more in national and international conferences where the target audiences for a platform like this will be attending. So I might be missing something in Connecticut, and if you know of something, I'd be happy to go there.
Yeah. Yeah, I always keep my eye on what NORD is up to, but typically it is usually those larger conferences. But I've gone to a couple things that were in Farmington or Hartford area during the week, kind of around the day of Rare Disease Day, which is usually the end of February, or the rarest day of the year if it's February 29th.
Yeah. Well, we actually participate in Rare Disease Day up at the Capitol as well.
Oh, fantastic.
Just through participation.
Mm-hmm. Now, something that is very recent in the news is that the 21st Century Cures Act was passed. And for short, it's kind of just known as the Cures Act. So can you explain really what this act is and what it's going to change, especially kind of altering people's lives in the rare disease community?
Yeah, this was fantastic news for the rare disease community. So 21st Century Cures ensures that the patient voice is front and center and will be heard. So For us, the great thing about that is with one voice, we have so many ways to capture and share that patient experience that we're really a little bit out ahead of the legislation. So we were really happy to see that come through because the patient voice is so critical in rare disease. If you think about rare diseases, there is in most rare diseases, there's very little longitudinal information, right? Because you know we're restricted by the confines of a clinical trial, if there are clinical trials running in a rare disease. And on top of that, there is even less longitudinal information from the patient perspective or from the caregiver perspective. What 21st Century Cures does is make sure that we are now understanding the patient perspective. Very important stuff. You know, we're developing our next feature to come out is a thing called Rare Journey. And Rare Journey captures just that. It captures the clinical experience of the patient, so misdiagnosis, treatments, specialty visits, things like that. But we're also adding in life experiences. So we're trying to help people understand that this is not a patient, it's a person, right? So they graduated from college, or they got married, or they had a baby, or they joined an advocacy group. So we add that into the patient journey. And the other thing we do, which is really important because it adds quality of life element into both the clinical and the life journey, is we have a sentiment palette of 20 emotions that they can attach to each one of their experiences. Going for surgery, I'm upset, or I'm depressed, or I had a clean biopsy, I'm happy. So we can capture all this information, and just seeing the journey for one patient is phenomenal. Now, when we throw in 100 patients, or maybe 1,000 patients in this rare disease, the data that we're going to be able to get out of that and contribute to learning about this disease and sharing back with the community is crazy. We're really excited about it.
And that's really an important point of sharing data, is that if you have all of these patients really sharing their own experiences, and kind of by doing so, their data, that being able to share that with other maybe pharmaceutical companies or other companies that are looking to help people with rare diseases but need that data, there's been a push for free the data of people not kind of hoarding their own data but really sharing so that we can advance further.
Well, that is, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is a big part of our philosophy. We really believe in the power of collaboration. That's why we're creating this multi-stakeholder platform where everybody can play nice in the sandbox, from patients to pharma to key opinion leaders. And so we try to give a lot to the community. We give them a place where they can share how they're feeling. We give them knowledge. We give them a way to connect with clinical trials. But the awesome thing about it is when they get in and they participate, we also get a lot back. So it's a real win-win opportunity. And that whole philosophy around collaboration really drives us.
And you're not just hitting the medical side of things. You're really talking about everything and just the entire experience as a whole, or you mentioned the rare journey. And kind of one thing that we've been talking about is the pharmaceutical aspect. But in order to actually get drugs to be in the development stages, which it takes a very long time, as I'm sure you're very aware of, But how does the marketing approach differ between orphan drugs or drugs specifically designed for rare diseases versus a more traditional drug, something for diabetes or something that is a very common disease?
Well, this is a great question, and let me see if I can put it in perspective for you. And it's based on my personal experience. I was on the original Lipitor launch team. Lipitor is one of the largest drugs in the history of the pharmaceutical industry. And what I've learned moving into the rare disease is that the marketing side of commercializing a drug like Lipitor is vastly different from how it should be done in rare disease. So the best way or best words to describe successful rare marketing from my perspective is intimate. There's a real need to understand the patient and the caregiver and the advocates. They play a huge role here. I think probably the next term I would use is targeted. Since these diseases are rare, those who treat them are rare too. And the academic centers who have expertise in them are rare also. So we need to find them, and we need to talk to them, and we need to learn from them, and we need to share all that information. And I'd probably say the last part of it is multidimensional, because the audience, when marketing a product for a rare disease, while small in number, is wide in interest, right? So we have to address patients and caregivers and payers and KOLs and specialists and geneticists and nutritionists. So the audience is really wide in terms of expertise, but small in terms of numbers. And the way you communicate has to be very intimate.
Because oftentimes people with a rare disease or caregivers of patients with rare diseases already know a lot of the information. So you're not really explaining things to them if it comes to the drug, right? It's more of saying this is what's available.
Yes, you know, and that's an interesting viewpoint. I just had an email conversation with a father of a child with a rare disease. And what often happens is the parents become the advocates, and the parents dive in and learn more about that rare disease than most typically their pediatricians know or the general practitioner knows until they can find those experts in the space. And they're unbelievable. I had that own experience with my mother. I knew the literature better than the physicians. I was really pleasantly surprised when we were at Memorial Sloan Kettering, and there was a fellow there who knew all the papers I was talking about. She was really informed on my mother's rare disease, and we could have a great conversation about it. It made me feel very comfortable with the treatment that my mom was getting. So the caregivers become really important and really knowledgeable.
And as a physician, it's hard to keep up on every single rare disease. You really can't. And specializing is obviously something that many physicians do, but more the approach of think zebra, not horse, because most of the time it's a horse. It's something that's common, but sometimes it can be a zebra. It can be a rare disease. So it's keeping those kind of both in mind and not just going with what is the most obvious, because that's where we get the misdiagnoses.
That's exactly it. Can you imagine trying to teach all these medical students about 7,000 rare diseases? Maybe they'll see two in their entire career.
Right. Right. So it's the very approach.
Yeah. So it's very difficult, but sometimes you're right. When they hear those hoofbeats, sometimes it is a zebra.
It is.
That's why the rare community has adopted the zebra as their mascot. Here's a cool thing that I learned. So the rare community has adopted the zebra as a mascot, but when you see a zebra with colorful stripes, that means there's treatment for that particular rare disease.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Makes sense for a lot of things I've seen.
Yeah.
So any parting advice for patients or caregivers that are maybe now learning of their diagnosis and are just kind of being introduced to the world of rare diseases?
Yeah, I mean, I have to tell you that these people are amazing. They're passionate. They're committed. But we also have to understand that they are a little bit different. Sometimes they just want to hug, right? Sometimes they just want to feel that it's okay and there's someone out there like them that they're having the same experience with. And then on the other end of that spectrum, some of these people end up starting pharmaceutical companies. It's amazing. So we understand that, that they're all passionate. They all have different drivers, and they all have needs. So we have to be very aware and cognizant. And I'm going to go back to my other word, intimate, when we're dealing with these people.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today and just sharing with us about One Voice and just the potential and impact it's already having on people.
Well, thank you, Kira. I had a great time.
People can check out onevoice.world for information about all the different communities and ones that are up and coming, and fapvoice.com for the current community that is happening. If you want to follow on Twitter and Facebook, they can be found at One Voice World. If you're interested in learning more about the show, dnapodcast.com has all the information for you, including all episodes. And on Twitter, at dnapodcast is where I'm always tweeting, usually about rare diseases. That kind of seems to be what I'm talking about the most in genetic counseling. So be sure to follow on there. And any questions for me or Dan can be sent in at info@dnapodcast.com. Thanks again for joining me.
Okay. Thank you, Kara.
Thanks for listening, guys. And join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.